This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Resource Center. I'm Maya Tan. Today we're exploring the world of the social enterprise. What are the trends and what it takes to be more effective in fundraising and generating revenue? Here to tell us more is Jamie Veach, business and social enterprise consultant and radio presenter. He specializes in media and communications and works with organizations, businesses and social enterprises in the areas of PR and communications, business mentoring and management consulting, fundraising and commercial development, as well as research. Welcome.
Maya, thank you. Thank you for having me.
To start off with, could you give us an overview, you know, some of the major trends you see coming out of the social enterprise landscape?
Yes, certainly. I'm working mainly with UK social enterprises, but I've found it absolutely fascinating to come to Malaysia and talk with social enterprises here and to see that there is a growing awareness of social enterprise, what social enterprise is, from government level all the way to ordinary people. And it feels to me as though the situation in Malaysia is comparable to the situation in the United Kingdom 10 years ago. 10 years ago, if you'd asked someone where I'm from, what's a social enterprise, no one would have known what you were talking about. Now we have lots and lots of people who are increasingly aware of social enterprises. They could name many UK social enterprises, and they're really excited about the idea of people doing business for good.
So in terms of trends, are social enterprises becoming more and more relevant compared to nonprofits or profit-driven companies?
Yes, they are. We've had a global banking crisis, and people have seen numerous examples of large businesses where shareholders extract all the value, and that value often comes at a considerable environmental or social cost. And people are getting cross. And social enterprise is a pragmatic way for business functions to actually really put something back into society. And I'm seeing that people welcome that.
There are a lot of startups these days. Everyone wants to be a startup entrepreneur and make it big. And this includes social enterprises. Some make it, but some don't. So in your observation, the social enterprises that have great staying power, what are they doing differently?
Well, they plan and they focus in exactly the same way as any ordinary or traditional business. They ask for advice and they ask for help. And that's something that not everyone is comfortable doing, because some people feel it's a sign of weakness to ask for help. But actually, time and again, with the social enterprises that I interview and speak with, those who are succeeding are people who are very happy to ask for help and ask for advice and to listen to all sorts of people and to take as much advice and support as they can. And that's through informal networks, and it's through asking people to refer customers to them and all sorts. But it's actually taking the time not only to have a good, solid business plan, not only to have an awareness of what their customers actually want, because often people think that their customers want something and actually their customers want something entirely different. Right. But actually keep on asking for advice, support and help, and don't think you've got all the answers.
So it's a culture of continuous learning, a culture of constantly looking for solutions to problems and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So social enterprises should be seeking out lessons, and that's asking people one-to-one, that's asking people in groups, that's reading, keeping up to date with their learning, that's listening to really good radio programs
and podcasts.
So on, and podcasts.
Wink, wink.
Absolutely. So they know where to come. So.
Yes. Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about societal impact. I think we gather that that's why social enterprises are increasingly becoming more relevant. First of all, how would you define societal impact?
Okay, well, social enterprises, traditionally, they have a double or triple bottom line in terms of they generate an economic return. In other words, they generate a surplus, and they have a positive impact on society, and quite often they'll have a positive environmental impact as well. Now, I'm not anti-business. I'm not anti-traditional business myself. And there are lots of values-driven businesses, traditional businesses, who've always done much more than they need to, much more than they have to, much more than they're legally obliged to in terms of creating positive impact. But there are plenty of businesses. I don't want to name any, but there are plenty of traditional businesses where, in the pursuit of profit for shareholders, they actually have a destructive effect. And so social enterprises are certainly distinguished by the fact that because they have a double or a triple bottom line in terms of they have to make a surplus, but they also have to put something back in terms of their social impact and environmental impact too, they are definitely doing something positive for us all. So that is a distinguishing feature.
Between social enterprises and traditional businesses.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So can societal impact be measured? Because you did mention that some traditional businesses would have their CSR campaigns and they would also give back. Can this be measured?
Yes. I think it's really important to try and measure your impact. I think it's crucial and it's vital. If you say you're a social enterprise and someone says, okay, prove it. How are you going to prove it? And we've had instances in the UK, and I've talked to people in Malaysia about instances here where there are ordinary businesses who say they're a social enterprise, but that aren't. So how do you prove it? And for me, it's about social impact measurement. And rather than getting extremely tangled up in very complicated systems of how to demonstrate and prove your social impact, I think it's a case of make it simple. Be transparent, be clear about what your social impact is, and then how you demonstrate and prove it. And so for a social enterprise, it's a case of what official research is there or statistics are there to back up the problem that you say you're addressing. So for many social enterprises, there is clear independent research already. So, you know, we might know that too much waste is going into landfill and not being recycled, for instance. Or there are statistics for a whole range of things that actually back up the need for the social enterprise. So if that's there, that's a good baseline. And then figure out what you're trying to do for your stakeholders, for your customers, for your clients and for society, and what can actually be counted, and then measure it in a transparent way so that if you measure it, but if someone else measures it in the same way, they'll get the same results. And then you can come back in 3 months or in 6 months or in 9 months and measure again, and you can see the impact of what you've done. So you can say, look, because we have done X, then this is the change that we have created. And so people can immediately see, and it has to be transparent. And that's really, really important.
It sounds like something that should be included in annual reports, for
example. It should.
Yeah.
And in the UK, actually, we now have something called the Social Value Act, and that only came into effect last year. And still, a lot of social enterprises don't know about it, which frustrates me if I stand up in a room in the UK and say, have you heard of the Social Value Act? And maybe at the moment, about 30% of people in the room say yes and 70% say no. And I'm saying, well, you're all social enterprises. You will benefit from this because this only came into effect last year after lobbying from Social Enterprise UK. And it means that if a public sector organisation, local government, health, is putting out a contract for consideration, then they have to consider the social impact as well. And I'll give you an example of how this could work. Imagine that a local authority in a city of 500,000 people, for instance, is going to put out a contract for the provision of catering in schools. That's quite a big contract. And traditionally, there might only be 3, 4, 5, maybe 10 large organisations who would be of the size to be able to bid for that contract, to be able to deliver it. And they might be big traditional businesses. And for a small social enterprise catering company with maybe 5 or 10 staff, a contract like that would be impossible to go for. But because of the Social Value Act, because the large organisation that's putting the contract out has to consider social impact when they look at the bids, the tenders that they receive, if a large traditional company says, yeah, well, we know that they've got to consider social impact now. So they say, well, we'll work with 10 or 20 local small neighbourhood social enterprises in the city to help deliver this contract. Then they can bring social enterprises in. The social enterprise have access to a contract they wouldn't have had before. The big business is still making some money for its shareholders. They're happy, but to win the contract, that big business have brought in social enterprises too. And so the idea, of course, if it works, is that everyone benefits.
It sounds like a great policy.
It's a great policy, and it's a policy I wish more people knew about, but it's a great policy when it works and if everyone benefits. And for that to work, of course, those small social enterprises have to be demonstrating their social impact. Otherwise, you know, the whole thing doesn't work.
Well, we'll be right back with more from Jamie Veitch, social enterprise consultant on Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Breaking financial matters, BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. This is Resource Centre. I'm Maya Tan. If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Jamie Veitch, social enterprise consultant, and we're talking about the landscape of social enterprises. Earlier, we were talking about how, as a social enterprise, you have to sometimes prove your social impact. So, in your observation, what's the success rate of social enterprises, and you know, how much of this is driven by their core business objectives?
That's a good question, Maya. I think most social enterprises that I meet, they are driven by their social, the desire to change the world for the better. You know, that is the driving factor. But lots of people are really excited about using entrepreneurship to do that and earning income. And I'm seeing that social enterprises have all the pressures of a traditional startup. Some will succeed and some will fail. And what often can be an issue is that if a social enterprise thinks that people will buy their product or service just because they're a social enterprise, and what they've actually got to do is make sure they've got a product or a service that is of better quality than their competitors, first and foremost. And then the fact that they're a social enterprise is a second reason for people to buy. Because whilst I might actively go out and seek to buy from a social enterprise simply because it's changing the world for a better place, we can't always assume that that's how everyone behaves. And actually, people buy products and services, of course, on quality. That's the main thing. Does it do what it says it? So you've got to get the product right. And you can't just depend on wanting to change the world for the better to make people buy the product or the service.
It kind of surprised me when you said that there are some social enterprises who need to prove that they are a social enterprise. You would think that off the bat, they would tell their core story and they go, yes, I sell jams and they're all made by single moms. And it's very clear then, you know, the social impact. So it surprised me that there are some companies where, you know, it's kind of vague.
Yeah, certainly some traditional companies just have started occasionally using the words social enterprise anyway, because they think that this is a new exciting growth area, and they think they'll pick up business. So we've got to be careful of people getting on the bandwagon when they're not a social enterprise as well. And you know, I think if you're saying that you do something that is positive, then you have to be able to demonstrate it. You mentioned earlier about this kind of stuff, proving your social impact. It should be in your annual report, and it should. Absolutely.
Also, thinking about sustainability, income, is it a confirmed driver of sustainability?
Yes. I mean, for me and for many people in the UK social enterprise sector, if you're talking about a real sustainable social enterprise that's going to have the chance of continuing to exist, it's got to not be dependent on grants. It's got to be generating 50 or over 50% or even over 75% of its income from, you know, generating its own revenue. In other words, by selling a product or service. And of course, many social enterprises in perhaps year one or year two, they're more grant dependent than that to get going, in the way that can be the case sometimes with businesses. Or they might, you know, a traditional business might have a large investor in year one or year two and not have to actually make any money. So I wouldn't necessarily get too hung up about it in year one or year two, as long as there's a very clear idea of where the revenue is going to come from in terms of it generating its own sustainability on an ongoing basis.
And then I suppose two of the ways that social enterprises achieve cash flow is one through fundraising, two through generating revenue, two very separate areas. What are the elements to consider for each one?
I suppose, first of all, let's go back to who your stakeholders, which includes your customers, but also includes people where you creating social impact gives them value. So think really, really widely about who they are. Now, the customers, in terms of on the generating income side, it might be easy to identify. You know, we're selling jam, people who want to buy jam, you know, but go wider than that. And where are your customers? You know, what are the ways to reach your customers that other people aren't using? How do you engage them? On the fundraising side, it's thinking about stakeholders where your social impact really, really benefits them. So you can perhaps, by creating your social impact, you can save them a lot of money. In that case, can you have a contract with them? Can you have a grant from them? Or can they simply put some fundraising income your way? And it's, of course, that then comes down to proof and demonstrating you are what you say you are and you do what you say you do. Take it back again to the revenue side and selling things. For a lot of social enterprises, the idea of selling things up front, as you can do with rewards-based crowdfunding, can help to get an idea going. So your customers are actually funding your cash flow. So it's really a case of thinking creatively and not just thinking that you're the first customer you think of and the first stakeholder you think of are the only ones.
I also read on your website, speaking about selling, that you're an advocate of fear-free selling. So what does that entail? Sounds interesting.
That's a good question. People are sometimes simply scared of selling. It's a case of no one's necessarily decides that I'm going to become a salesperson as what I do. But actually, we all have to sell our ideas. We have to prove our value, and that's selling, in effect. And we have to ask for business. We have to not be scared of asking for business. And one thing that I notice in selling is that people don't ask for referrals. In other words, if you've got a happy customer or someone who's really impressed with what you do, then A, you need to work hard to keep them happy. But B, you need to say to them, I'm really pleased you love what you do. Can you tell me anyone else who you can think of who would like what we do? Can you give me their names? Can you tell them about us? And actually, this, the power, the awesome power of selling in that way, where you're making people not feel too pressured because you're asking them to refer business to you. But of course, in the same way, you're asking them to buy, to continue buying from you as well. And it's something not enough people do.
And it's also relying on word of mouth, which is the most powerful form of marketing or communications.
Absolutely. And I mean, from my point of view as a consumer or as a customer, or when I'm acting as a journalist, and I know it will be the same for you in terms of people who want to be on your podcast because you have a great reputation. So I'll have, on the radio program that I present in the UK, I might have 50 to 100 people get in touch per week and say, can I be on your radio show? You know, and I've got 3 slots. But if someone I know emails me and says, oh, Jamie, I've just heard about this fantastic social enterprise, they're brilliant, you should get them on your show, then I'm going to think, yeah, okay, I'll have a look at them. Whereas if of the 50 or 100 people who email me each week asking to be on the show, I will, of course, look at what they say. But if I'm on a deadline, then I might give each email a 1 or 2 second read of the subject and the first couple of lines if I'm really, really, really pressured, if I'm getting through several hundred emails a day. Whereas if it's an email from someone I know and I've worked with and they're recommending someone, then, you know, it's going to really help get someone on the show. And that might simply be because the social enterprise has phoned them up and said, oh, you know, can you tell other people about us? And it's the same, isn't it? Whether, you know, if you're buying something, if someone you know, one of your friends recommends something, you take a recommendation seriously.
still on the point of money, microfinancing, how does it all work?
Microfinance is fantastic. In the UK, we have community development finance, and of course, internationally, community development finance with Grameen Bank and so on in Bangladesh. And the community development finance sector in America has been powerful. It's about relationship banking, one-to-one relationships, localized banking, rather than the idea of rocking up to the bank, asking for a business bank account or a social enterprise bank account, and then having the computer says no from some head office computer. Whereas this is about specialised institutions who are fiscally prudent. You know, they're not just throwing money away, but they take the time to sit down and get to know the people that they are considering lending to, identify what their challenges are, and identify why they need the money if they want to borrow. If they want to borrow to develop, say, a social enterprise asset, or if they need working capital for their social enterprise, they get to know them. They also, quite often in community development finance, they provide other support as well as lending when they say yes. And it's really, really powerful. It's a growing area, and it's something that really benefits businesses of all kinds, social enterprises and businesses, when they have a good relationship at that local level.
So you were here in Malaysia giving a talk under the auspices of the British Council. Did you manage to speak to a lot of Malaysian social entrepreneurs and get a feel of what we're about?
Yes, I did. And it's interesting time to be here as well, with so much going on in the country about social enterprise.
You did also mention that we're about 10 years behind you.
Well, 10 years in terms of public awareness of social enterprise. I mean, I think probably you're catching up with us in terms of policy development and both at government level, and the work that organisations like the British Council are doing is really, really positive. But it feels like 10 years ago there was a lot of great stuff going on in the UK, but the public perception hadn't caught up. So it's probably only 10 years behind in terms of public perception. But yes, whilst here, I've talked with many social enterprises. Really, really interesting. I'm really excited and inspired to see what they do.
Key takeaways for social entrepreneurs in Malaysia?
Ask for help, because I think wherever you're working in the world, your critical success factor is, are you willing to keep learning, and are you willing to keep asking people to help you? So keep learning, ask for help, ask for advice. So listen to great podcasts, go on British Council courses, keep reading, keep learning internationally and from your peers. Ask people to open doors for you. So just don't be afraid of using networks, and ask people to refer business for you, or to refer partnerships to you. So I think, I mean, those key takeaways for social entrepreneurs here, I mean, I think they're international, but they're crucial.
And where can people listen to your podcasts?
Well, if people are interested in social enterprise in the UK and my podcasts, they can go to sheffieldlive.org, which is the community radio station that I present the radio show on. And if they click on the tab called Shows and then click on Business Live, my show is called Business Live. Podcasts are up there, so at sheffieldlive.org or on my own website, jamieveach.co.uk.
Thanks for being here. It was a privilege having you here.
Thank you, Maya.
Jamie Veach, Social Enterprise Consultant. This has been Resource Centre, and I'm Maya Tan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.